If you've got the money, honey, I've got the time. We'll go honky-tonkin' and we'll have a time. We'll have more fun, baby, all the way down the line. If you've got the money, honey, I've got the time.
It's time for Inside Churchill Downs. Now, here are your hosts, Darren Rogers and Kevin Kirstein.
Good Friday evening to you. Happy Friday. It's, the weather outside is awesome.
It's great.
It's great for a holiday weekend. And we have, of course, Memorial Day racing at Churchill Downs. I'm Darren Rogers here along with Kevin Kirstein. And KK, we get an action-packed show this evening. We're going to have a visit with assistant trainer David Carroll. He, of course, has been watching over War of Will, the winner of last weekend's Preakness. We have Rusty Arnold. He'll be active this weekend in stakes action at Churchill. Plus, he's been red hot. And then another trainer that's on fire, Steve Asmussen, the leading trainer at Churchill Downs. Boy, he had a good Preakness weekend, and he had a great Derby weekend, so we got to catch up with him.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a fun show. And, you know, of course, this Memorial Day, we're going to have a great we had a five-day week of racing beginning on Thursday, and 12:45 post tomorrow, 11-race program. It's a very solid program of racing tomorrow that includes the $100,000 Kirtana overnight stakes as well as the $100,000 Grade 3 winning colors. And full fields abound, great betting opportunities. No single six jackpot to chase anymore. That got hit.
Went down
this evening just a few minutes ago to one lucky bettor who won a little more than $330,000.
355, I think it was. I mean, a massive, massive payout, and for just a little 20-cent investment.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Good for them.
Yeah, good for them, and also good for David Carroll. David, congratulations on being part of the winning team. That's the we wanted to have you on. A lot of people don't realize, you know, you have the owner, Gary Barber, you have trainer Mark Cassie, but and jockey Tyler Gaffalione, but you have such an important team behind the scenes. There's always an assistant. There's always an exercise person. There's a groom. There's the people at the farm. And I know a gentleman here who's joining us, David Carroll. He managed the string for Mark Cassie this winter at Fairgrounds and oversaw the three-year-old preparation of War of Will. We wanted to have you on. And oh, by the way, it also happens to be the 30th anniversary of Easy Goer winning the Belmont Stakes. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But congratulations, David.
Darren and Kevin, thank you for having me. And it was absolutely it's just tremendous. We're so proud of the horse. And, yeah, we've got a great team. And just to see the horse win the Preakness is very, very rewarding.
Let's start from the beginning of the first time you laid your hands on War of Will. When was that? Last fall at Churchill, or when was that? And tell us your immediate thoughts of when you first saw him.
Well, he came into me after he ran in the summer at Woodbine, preparing for the Bourbon. He came in with a reputation. Jamie Begg, who first had the horse at Belmont before he went to Saratoga, he told Mark after he breezed him one time that this was a special horse. So Jamie was correct then, and anyone that was around the horse always held him in such high esteem. He came in to me after running twice on the turf, placed twice. The minute you saw him, he was such a good-looking horse, beautiful mover, and he just had a lot of charisma about him. Every time you'd breeze him on the dirt, you'd go, wow. And that's how Nick always called him, just wow. He would just blow you away the way he breezed. Pedigree screamed turf. And we always felt like that we'd get him through, you know, his immediate goal, which was the Bourbon and onto the Breeders' Cup. And not that he ran bad. He ran he ran well, both times soft turf. And especially the Breeders' Cup. But that gave us an opportunity to put him on the dirt. And so, you know, he broke his maiden at Churchill, and the rest was history after that. But he's just a beautiful horse to be around. And now that he's filling out and getting stronger and more confident, he's even more beautiful. And it was just great for the whole. It was great for the whole team.
He certainly had the interesting winter campaign. Obviously, we'll get to probably the Louisiana Derby mishap in a minute. But when you got him down there and ran in that LeCompte Stakes, I mean, did you start dreaming of the Derby after that? Because you still really didn't know what to expect of him on the a fast dirt. He broke his maiden on the slop and had that turf pedigree. What did you think after he won that LeCompte in dominating fashion?
You know, Kevin, just watching this horse train on a daily basis, he couldn't but give you confidence. I mean, he just filled you with confidence. And we went into the LeCompte with an awful lot of confidence. Obviously, he had to go out there and do it. But, you know, we would have been disappointed if he didn't win it. Obviously, it's easy to say that now. But just being around him and watching him train, you know, we just felt like, you know, if he runs the way he trains, he's going to be awfully tough to beat. I thought he won impressively that day. You know, and then we come back in the Risen Star, trained the same way. We went in there with a lot of confidence. You know, he won that, and going into Louisiana Derby, we're the same way. They're going to have to come and beat us, and that was one of the most disappointing races that I've definitely been a part of for an awful long time. And it wasn't just disappointment on the personal front; it was disappointment for the horse because, you know, to win the LeCompte, to win the Risen Star, I just love the fairgrounds and to be able to sweep that series would have meant an awful lot to us. And we just felt like after Louisiana Derby, just the horse didn't get to show what he was capable of. Can't say enough about how Mark and Mr. Barber handled that. They walked back to the barn after that race and we watched him cool out, and he certainly wasn't comfortable cooling out, but everybody was positive. Couldn't have handled it any better, and everybody just felt so bad for the horse because we felt that he didn't get a chance to show what he was capable of doing.
David, you know about the highs and lows of this game on a, you know, they're on a daily basis and
hourly basis,
right, hour to hour, and so here you have this horse who's the favorite. He loses his action a few strides out of the gate. You've touched on about how disappointing it was, you know, for the horse, but what were your emotions back at the barn seeing him off, and then talk us through when you thought he might be all right. The Derby might not be out of the cards.
Well, your initial reaction is just absolutely disappointment. I mean, you're absolutely good. It's a big race in itself. Mr. Barbara flew in, Mark and Tina, and, you know, all entourage were there. We just felt that would have been, for him to sweep the prep series would have been just, you know, it's a tremendous accomplishment in itself. But it gets back to the horse. Anyone just around this horse, Darren and Kevin, you absolutely love him. You want nothing but the best for him. And we just, watching him come back, because we went walking to the paddock, we were so full of confidence, he looked tremendous. And then to watch him after the race was just a different horse. He had that look in his eye. He was off behind, and it just wasn't the same horse. And it was a very tough evening. You know, we shipped out of there a couple of days later. We got him back up to Keeneland here, and then he had a full evaluation, X-ray, and MRI, CAT scan. He had the whole work's done, and nothing was broken. It was just going to take a little bit of time, and we did therapy on him. And, you know, and the great thing with Mark and Mr. Barber is, you know, there's a lot of horsemanship involved here, that we were never going to force the horse to do anything he wasn't capable of doing. Once we got all the tests back, we just proceeded with caution and let the horse tell us what he was capable of doing. And it was, you know, it was the weekend days before he started to feel better than himself, started to move better. And, then we started feeling, okay, well, maybe we do have a chance of making it. But the horse was always going to have to take us there. we were never going to make him take us there, regardless if it's the Derby or not, because then that would only compromise the rest of his, you know, year. We were to force him to do something he wasn't able to do. The most gratifying thing about the Derby was the fact that we got him back from the Louisiana Derby. We took our time with him. And each step, each day got better, each week got better, and that he showed up on the day to run the race of his life, down the backside. I could tell, you know, he got obviously poorly drawn, but he was traveling so beautifully down the backside, maybe a little bit strongly, but he was traveling so well nevertheless. And then what happened, and, you know, he never did get a chance, so, we were like, oh, my God, the Louisiana Derby, the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, once again, we felt so bad. We were so thankful that we got him back in one piece. And it's been well documented what, you know, what could have happened. And once again, Mr. Barber and Mark showed what class people they are, mm-hmm. and how to handle the whole situation. And that's what made the Preakness, you know, greater than maybe you'd say it normally was, just because we were so happy for the horse.
I mean, to look back at it, David, is, you know, with what happened in the Louisiana Derby, it was almost as if, you know, he didn't have a race, right? I mean, he never showed up running. So the Kentucky Derby, in essence, was his first out, really, in 11 weeks.
Absolutely, and I think it was a great, great team effort to get him back to that point, but it also speaks volumes about the horse and what an athlete he is, mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, we can't, you know, you can do everything, you know, correctly and properly, but if you don't have the horse, it doesn't make any difference. So I think it just speaks volumes about the horse. But nevertheless, we were very proud of the way we got him there, of the race he ran, of the race Tyler was riding, and unfortunately, you know, what happened, and, you know, we're so thankful after the races to have him back, because, my God, that could have been catastrophic, you know. Mm-hmm.
David, I've seen you at the barn, and you're there all the time, and you're very hands-on, and what was it like for you when you had War of Will at Keeneland, and you shipped him up to Churchill, and he was based there for the Derby and for the Preakness? What were the nerves like for you? Did you get any sleep in between those few weeks there, between April, the last week in April, until after the Preakness, after you got him back?
No, it's Kevin, it's like, you know, when we put him on the van to go to Churchill, and you, from all winter, you're every minute, every day, you know, you go into the barn, he's the first one to check, how is he doing? He's doing, you know, and then all of a sudden he's not in his stall anymore, and it's you know, he's up with Mark and Alan, and we have such a great team, and we all communicate great. But it was, I'd be lying if I said I didn't if I didn't miss him, and it was tough, but he was in great hands, and it showed in the race he ran. But it was I missed the horse so much. I loved the horse, and it's just great to have him back here now, and I'm very grateful that Mark will send him back to Keeneland.
It's like sending him off to summer camp, a kid to summer camp, right?
Yeah,
you're worried about him, but you know he's in good hands.
Absolutely, and look at, you know, we love what we do, and we just, this horse, I can't tell you how much we love him here, and what a great athlete, and what a great horse he is, and anyone that's, you know, it's a privilege to be around him. That's just the way or any good horse, but he's definitely a privilege to be around.
We're visiting with assistant trainer David Carroll. He's the chief assistant for Mark Cassie, and he manages the string of horses at Keeneland down the road. And War of Will is now back in your hands, correct? Preparing for the mile and a half Belmont.
Yes, he is, and you know, he arrived back last Monday, and you know, he's very sound. You can, you know, he's obviously had two hard races in 2 weeks. So our job now is to just, you know, just give him some rest here, build his energy level back up. He's plenty fit enough, and the plan is probably to breed them here at one time and ship him up the week before or the week of the Belmont. And as long as he continues to do well and he's healthy and breeze as well, I'm sure we'll take him up there.
You mentioned breezing, and I know a big part of War of Will and his, I don't want to call him his exercise rider because now he's a jockey, is your son, Declan, who just got the clearance to get back on horses. How exciting is it for you as a dad to see Declan get the clearance after what went down at Fairgrounds in March to be finally be able to be back in the saddle? And I'm assuming he probably will be asking you to get back up on War of Will for that breeze.
He's been asking me since he got injured. But yes, Kevin, you know, he got injured on March 7th, and he just had his CAT scan done, and they gave him permission. He was got back on horses 2 days ago for us at Churchill. We had him down here this morning. He actually wanted to get on War of Will, but I said no. I said, I'm riding him today. But no, look, he breezed him all winter. He did a great job with him. I'm very proud of Declan. I'm proud of the person he is, never mind how he rides. But it's great to see him back in the saddle again. It's something he actually loves to do. He's got a passion for it. And hopefully this is just a blimp for the future. But no, I mean, he played a big part in it. And you know, he breathes him that morning, March 7th, he breathes him that morning, and that afternoon he went down on the spill. So that just goes to show you the business we're in, and we were just so thankful and grateful that he wasn't any more seriously injured than he was. And, you know, he's back in the saddle now, and I can't wait to see him back. I can't wait to see him back in the afternoon.
Well, speaking of being in the saddle, it's hard to believe it was 30 years ago that we're now approaching this anniversary, but many people might not realize that you were the exercise rider for the champion Hall of Fame horse, Easy Goer, for Shug McGahee. And, of course, this is the 30th anniversary of Easy Goer defeating Sunday Silence and denying him the Triple Crown in the 89 Belmont Stakes. Take us back to those days and your reflections on Easy Goer.
Oh, I mean, there were terrific days. For 2 years there, I never took a day off. Every day I was with him, whether it was riding him or grazing him in the afternoons, traveling with him. Shug had such a powerful barn at that time. Mm-hmm. I think at one stage we had like 35 horses in the barn, and 12 of them were Grade One winners, and that'll show you the depth. Wow. of the barn. And he was a huge part of my life, he was probably, you know, the best horse I've ever been on, and hopefully WOW will go on to emulate him in the Belmont. But him and Seeking the Goal were some of the best horses I've ever had the privilege of sitting on and working with. Yeah, I mean, look, the Derby was good wrenching. I guess the Preakness was more good wrenching than the Derby. Just that in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, it was an off track. He never did like an off track, and he didn't run his race that day. Got beat by Is It True, who we beat comprehensively earlier in that year. Mm-hmm. We came back into Preakness and felt like, you know, we would gain revenge. And it was one of the races of, you know, it was one of the greatest races ever run.
Greatest race I've ever seen, hands down. Yeah, greatest race ever.
It was just a tremendous race. You know, great owners. East versus the West at that time, great rivalry. You know, Shug and Charlie had so much respect for one another. Mr. Whittingham had so much respect for one another. And everything was done with class, and it was just about, you know, let's do it on the racetrack and let the horses do the talking. And, you know, we got beaten to Preakness, but at the same time, we left there with our heads held high that we give it everything. I think, and you can ask Pat Day this because he tells me all the time that if he could ever take one ride back, that would be it. But obviously, you know, he can't. And Pat's one of the greatest riders ever to sit on a horse. And but we left there. Shug left there, you know, with his head high. We're so proud of the horse. But I can't tell you, it's hard to put into words or articulate how well he came out of that race. And when we got him back to Belmont, we felt like, okay, we got to stop the Sunday Silence. This is our home track. It's the Belmont. He trained unbelievable. I mean, he just...
And ran unbelievable.
He did, Darren, but, you know, he showed that week, you know, he just trained on reels. Every day he got stronger, more energy, he looked better, and that's hard to say after two hard races, but it just showed you the kind of horse he was. The Triple Crown was on the line. There was so much at stake. On the walk over there, I'll never forget it, and Chuck probably doesn't even remember saying this, and because he was a man of few words at the time. I mean, there's a lot of stress, but as we walked over, Buzz Tenney, longtime assistant, and I, when he walked over and he says, "This horse runs the race I think he's going to do," he said, "We're going to see something special today," and that's what we did. And it was just unbelievable. I mean, he put in a performance, one for the ages, and we felt such, once again, we just wanted Easy Grower to show everybody how great he was. And, you know, they're two great horses and great rivalry, and everything was done the right way. And it's what racing was all about, you know, it was great days, you know. And it was just the best going against the best. And it was a privilege to be around him, to be around horses like that. And it's hard to believe it's 30 years, but believe me, I can remember like it was yesterday. I remember all the days going back, walking them, grazing them, riding them, breezing them, all these races. And I've just been very lucky all my life to be around really, really good people and really, really good horses. And I'm doing it right now with Mark. And I'm just the luckiest guy in the world, to be honest with you.
That is absolutely great walk down memory lane with Easy Goer. And let's do it again in a couple of weeks at Belmont. 30 years apart, get two wins with War of Will. You play a big part in it, and I just want to wish you the best and congratulations again for a hardworking horseman behind the scenes. Couldn't be more happy for you.
Well, you know, Kevin, Darren, you know, you guys do a great job. I'm absolutely love my job. Joining Mark and Tina and the whole team has been one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me in this game. And every day is a joy to come to the barn to work. And, you know, tomorrow we'll get up and we'll train Warwell and the rest of the team there. And, you know, every day is a good day. Some days are better than others, that's all.
I like it.
That's the truth. All right, David, yeah. David Carroll, enjoy the night and enjoy the couple of weeks. And, again, good luck in a couple of weeks.
Thank you very much, and you guys have a good evening. See you soon.
Okay, David Carroll, and we're going to go right from David Carroll to another horseman that we have the utmost respect for. And
Red hot
right now. Red hot Rusty. Rusty Arnold, good evening. Thank you for joining us on Inside Churchill Downs. We had a great visit with David Carroll talking about War of Will and his memories of Easy Goer. That was it's hard to believe it's 30 years ago, but I'm curious, from your standpoint, that watching that from afar, that had to be one of the greatest rivalries in racing, Sunday Silence and Easy Goer.
It was, and I don't know if David's still listening or not, but I would like to ask him if he remembers that he was actually blowing Easy Goer out for the Derby. I think it was the day before. Shug used to do that. He used to go a pretty sharp 3/8. And I had a nice colt at the time by the name of Tricky Creek. And by accident, the two of them hit the 3/8 pole together, or I was right in front of him. And I think Easy Goer did a little bit more than they had planned. And Shug was not a happy camper when they hit the wire. I will almost guarantee you David will remember that memory on Easy Goer.
I just texted him. He's, I don't know if he's listening or not, but I said, "Hey, if you didn't listen, Rusty just told us about the story about Tricky Creek. You forgot to mention about that one."
I think it was a little quicker blowout than they wanted.
Well, it just goes to show you how much you guys put forth a tremendous amount of planning. Every stable does to get a horse to come back and set for a race. But things can happen, and you have to adapt. But I know this winter wasn't the easiest winter for you. But you guys are rolling now. Congratulations on the hot start. Congratulations on the stakes win with Concrete Rose in the Edgewood. You had a heck of a Derby week, and it doesn't hurt to have these purses fueled these days by Derby City Gaming. It's been nice.
No, it's a great time to have a good run, and the winter was cold, but it wasn't as bad as it looked. Mm-hmm. I didn't run a lot of the better horses, and then some of the horses that we did run either fortunately needed a trip or got a bad trip, and just it's one of those things. You get in a bad run or a good run in this business, and it seems to snowball, and it got to Kentucky and turned around at the right time, and very fortunate to be loaded. I was actually had a conversation with Shug before I left there. I said, I'm sitting here at 2 for 40, and I've never felt any better about my stable when I was leaving Florida. We were talking to Patty down there. And I said, I know I've got a lot of nice horses, and it just the better ones haven't run, and the ones that have had some small issues, but they're leaving here in great shape. And it was one of those things that just worked out for us. We've been on a very lucky run, and I'm like David, I know how fortunate I am.
Well, and you, the way your stable has operated through the years, you'd like to put a big focus on the Keeneland and Churchill spring and fall meets, correct?
I mean, we do. That's home for us, mm-hmm. And we want to run very hard through the spring and summer, see where we stand when Churchill's over. Then we take only a handful or two to Saratoga, and the others will stay here and gear up, and I would add Kentucky Downs into that mix when we mm-hmm. when we try to hit the fall. We try to hit September, October, and November very strong, and it's sort of worked, and it's nice when it comes around.
So on Derby week, you're firing on full cylinders, and Concrete Rose shows up in the Edgewood. You won the Florida Oaks with her, and the Jessamine. Her only flaw, really, was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I imagine, was it the Juvenile Fillies Turf? I would imagine the off-track maybe was an explanation for that, or in retrospect?
There were two or three things that just came that went wrong. She was having to run back probably in, 3 weeks, 20 days or so, which is probably a little quick. The track was extremely soft. There are soft tracks and soft tracks. Yeah. It had rained all day that day. And then we were running in one hole, and we were chasing a very, very good horse in Chad's horse in Newspaper Record. Mm-hmm. And this time around, although it was the same horse, we had a race under us. He didn't. I thought when we went into the race, we had a little edge on that to maybe even it up a little bit. Did I think we could beat her? Not really. But mm-hmm. I knew that we were at our best, and he was coming off a long layoff, and if you were ever going to take a run at her, that was the day to try it.
Tomorrow in the winning colors, you run two horses in there. You have Anathella, who's coming back off of a near six-month layoff, and you have the morning line favorite, a number 9 Allstruck, who won in wire-to-wire faction on Kentucky Oaks Day over the slop. Talk a little bit about Allstruck in her last race. Was that sort of planned to get her out on the lead, or did she sort of find it herself, do you think, that day?
That's kind of left up to Brian. When you ride these riders, they know them well. He rides a lot for me. We give them all the leadway. And she broke sharp that day. She was on the inside. He didn't want to get her in trouble. We'd had a couple of trouble trips, and she broke clean, and she just went on. And it was a good race for us. She had really done well. We thought she was going to run good at Keeneland. She hooked a very good horse, and Rudolph's horse, and didn't work out that day. But she really trained well and came around, and again, it was a nice stepping stone, and hopefully she can take another step forward.
The other horse you have in there, Anathella, she was entered in a stake out of town. I believe it was in Iowa, right? And you scratched. You're going to leave her at home. What's you're not known necessarily for a horse to fire fresh off a layoff. She has not started in 6 months. I thought that race two back last fall at Keeneland was an absolutely sensational win, a fast win. And how's she doing? Is she set to replicate that, or maybe she might need an outing or two?
I'm going to think she's fairly ready. She's a victim of circumstances being in this race. She was entered at Keeneland in a lounge race. It failed to fill. She was entered at Churchill probably 2 weeks ago. It did not go. Entered her at Iowa, was on the verge of going to Iowa, but the weather just was too hot for me to ship a filly this time of the year. I was afraid if I sent her all the way to Iowa, it's 90 degrees yesterday, and it's a long trip all the way out and back, and knock her out for the rest of the summer. I just made a last-second decision not to go, and this was actually the only race we could find that we could get her in. And she's at home. She likes the racetrack. She's been trained on pretty good because she's supposed to have run the last month and hasn't had the opportunity. So I think she's ready, and she's a very solid filly.
Going back to Allstruck a little bit, owned by G. Watts Humphrey Jr., who means a lot to us in the Churchill Downs community, I know means a lot to you as a trainer. What, just sort of sum him up as a career, as what Watts has meant to you, because he means certainly a lot to us, but for you as a trainer, I know he's supported you for many, many years.
Yeah, he is, I call him the boss, and I've worked for him for, I'll probably miss it, but it's close to 30 years, and he is an extremely involved owner, and we talk daily about the horses. There isn't a day that goes by that we don't have a conversation on them, and that's Christmas and New Year's, and it has been a great relationship, and just can't tell you how, I know there's a lot of good men and a lot of good owners in this business, but how privileged I've been to work for one of them, and that being him.
Well, one of those horses you train for him is one of my favorites. I love Hard Knocking Mares. Morticia has been so fun to watch run. Now, she got beat a neck in the Unbridled Sydney. What are your plans with Morticia moving forward?
I'm probably going to run her on the first against Colts and the Mighty Bow. It's I just don't want to travel twice. There was a thought of taking her to Belmont. She had run once at Belmont and won, but we've decided to stay at home and then and then go directly to Saratoga. Sorry about that, guys.
Oh, you're fine.
But we are going to just stay home, and then she'll go to Saratoga and run opening week at Saratoga.
What about a couple other horses you have? You won with Totally Boss. What do you think you might do with him?
Totally Boss is getting a little rest on the farm.
Okay.
It was kind of a scheduled rest. Mr. Hill likes to take them home for a couple weeks after they run a race or two. And all reports are from him for McDermott that he's doing great. He's probably going to come back in next week. And I think he's going to go to Parks. I think that race is on July 6th. It's a sprint going 5/8. I'm doing it off the top of my head. I know it's early July. And that's where he'll go.
A horse like Leinster, is this the type of horse that you continue to move through the conditions? He just won a first-level allowance at 5.5 on the turf.
Leinster we really like. That was the first time he was ever given the opportunity to do what we think he wants to do, and that's sprint on the grass. And as you could tell, Wayne had the horse, tried like three attempts to sprint him on the grass. It was rained off, it was rained off, it was rained off. And I got him to go to Florida because he was going to sprint on the grass in Florida. Didn't happen, didn't get in. And we finally got to Keeneland. The sprint maiden didn't go, so we just bit the bullet and put him in an A other than. He ran off the also eligibles and ran great, and I think that'll be his future, and we really like him. He's not going to make the Mighty Bow. He had a little issue, not major, missed a little bit of time, so you'll see him probably back in allowance race at Churchill Downs.
Great, and congratulations on the victory today with Skeptic. What I know it's real quick. We'd like you to enjoy the victory, but of course I will ask, what might the future hold? Return to Stakes Company?
The plan is to go to the Fleur de Lis. That was the plan all along. And she loves Churchill Downs. Her races have been good. She had gone a little south on us last fall. She's probably one of my favorite fillies, actually. And I had such high hopes for her. And she's one of Monmouth Oaks and just tailed off last fall. We ran her in the right races. She wasn't as good as she was. We turned her out all winter, sent her to Ocala. The Mayberries had her in Ocala for 3 months. center back to me and just wonderful shape. So much more weight on her. She looked great. Her race at Keeneland, her comeback race, was flattered when Brad Silly came back and won the Pimlico Distaff. And it was a hard-fought race. We fought her right to the wire, and she came back today and ran really, really well. And if she recovers, she'll go into Fleur-de-Lis. I know it's a step up, but I think she has that quality when we get her over there on the right day.
One of the factors that I wanted to ask you about, because I've been giving him grief in the morning, is your assistant, Jack Bohannon. This is the first meet that I've seen him out on the pony for most of the sets. Is this a this a change from Florida, or what's the deal with Jack being out on the pony every day?
I think that he's allowed people to get the pony well broke in for him, or he's people will ride him now.
Great answer.
How long do you and Jack go back?
Well, I can probably answer that. I'm going to say 79. He came off the farm. He had not been on the racetrack and went to work for me and stayed and was my assistant for 3 or 4 years and then left and trained on his own for several years. Yeah. And when Mr. Humphrey hired us, he brought us both back in pretty much. And this last run has probably been about 20 years.
Wow. That is a, that is an abs- it's the thing I like about the operation is – there's loyalty. I mean, from your owners to probably a lot of your help. And I know you can speak to it, but you're the name on the program, but it's a pretty in-depth team, I bet you're dealing with on a year-round basis.
Yeah, it Jack handles the Churchill division, always has. My wife and Claudio Cortez are with me at Keeneland. And I think Claudio's been with me about 20 years also, and Jack a little bit more than that, and Sarah, and everybody contributes, and they all get along well, and we don't make many changes.
Well, Rusty, you know, we only have 3 or 4 listeners that listen to Inside Churchill Downs, so we're not asking for much, but is there any horse I haven't asked you about that you might be particularly excited about? The way this horse is moving in the morning, and maybe I might be able to bet $2 on it for those 3 or 4 listeners here in Louisville.
You might call me on the right day because I have a maiden filly in first-time starter on Sunday.
Okay.
That we think the world of. And she's a first-time starter by Warfront out of a mare that I've trained. And, you know, I don't know that she'll win first time out. That's another thing that I'm not great at. They tell me, all the handicappers tell me that I don't usually get that done. But we think this filly's got a lot of talent, and I think she's got a big future.
That's First wave, yeah. She's the number 10 horse in race 9 on Sunday. For those of you who have your programs handy, take a look at First Wave. Rusty, again, thanks for joining us this evening. Really a pleasure to have you on our show, and best of luck tomorrow. We'll see you out at the races.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Rusty.
That's Rusty Arnold, who one of the most classy horsemen that I've personally been around. He's one of those Kentucky guys in and out. And, you know, we didn't bring up the UK Cats. He's a big Cats fan, and kept the Cats talk off the radio tonight.
We're in Louisville.
We're in Louisville, right? I know he's a Lexington guy. He's a Cats guy, and we could have brought that up, but we saved all the listeners out there because we're in Louisville.
But he's loaded for bear tomorrow. I really like that horse, and I liked his answer. I mean, this is a competitive winning colors tomorrow. Field of 12 drawn. Clearly Awestruck is one of the horses to beat in there, 3-1 on the morning line. But his other one, Anathelia, who drew the 2-hole, I kind of like her spot.
She's a gutsy horse, too. I went back and watched some of those races. She's pretty gutsy, and, you know, if she's fit, like Rusty said, she may deserve a look. You have Let It Ride Mom for a couple of starts on the dirt, didn't really do that well, now trying it again after breezing phenomenally in the mornings, in my opinion. Classy Act in the Joe Sharp barn now, making a start off the layoff. She's had some back class in her career, so very competitive running of this race, so... Fun times for the 11 race card tomorrow.
It is, and we can only have as much fun as this Hall of Fame horseman, because I can tell you when the big stage was, you know, the lights were shining on us, boy, he won 3 grade ones over Oaks and Derby days. And then we had a couple other stakes wins at Pimlico in the on the Preakness undercard. Steve Asmussen, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Pleased to have you on, and let's talk about a couple of these big wins that you've had. And by the way, you've got 10 wins at the meet, so he's top in the standings. He is now at 686 career Churchill Downs wins, 14 away from only becoming the third person to win 700. And oh, by the way,
knock knock, Dale Romans.
Knock knock, Dale. He's 38 wins away from becoming Churchill Downs' all-time leading trainer. So, all those accolades are out there, and nothing new to what you and your operation are moving forward with. Let's talk about the La Troyenne on Oaks Day with She's a Julie. What a nice victory that was.
Oh, very special victory. She's a Julie. Named after my wife, I don't think I've ever been as nervous running a horse as I've always been every time she runs. And yep. She's just a very special horse to all, the whole barn.
She and it was just a really nice victory that day. She floated out nicely. Ricardo is just. Can you talk about the relationship? I know you. You know, look, you were a former jockey. You like to use your regular riders. There's a familiarity there, but at the same time, it's not always easy on those on the jocks. Talk about the relationship you have. I think Ricardo is the best jockey riding at Churchill Downs today.
Well, he's extremely talented, and as you politely alluded to, I'm not easy to put up with.
Yeah.
But. You know, we expect a lot. I mean, who, mm-hmm. Everybody who is fortunate enough to be around these horses, all we want is 100% all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we expect that of the horses and everybody who comes in contact with them. And Ricardo is a tremendous talent with a attitude that is extremely similar to mine. If you know, winning some's not enough. You need to win them all. And he is just as hard on himself as probably more so than anybody. And I think that the sky's the limit for him. He's not going to be in a position where he is physically overmatched.
How about your victory with Mia Mischief? That was it has to be a little... extra satisfying to win for the Heilig Bros.
Oh, very much so. As you alluded to, you know, it was just a very special weekend. To mm-hmm. you know, the three grade ones, all three of their first grade ones, from horses that had made all of their starts in the barn for very special clients. You know, Bill and Corinne Heidelbro, when we were lucky enough to be put in the Hall of Fame and 2016, I was looking it up, and Jamie looked it up, and we'd won over 1,000 races for the Heidelbros alone, and just that wow. Doesn't even seem possible.
No,
you know, and then to have two Grade One winners, for them on Derby Day, it was how do you say it? Just a very special weekend. You know, my parents were in town, the boys were in town. Just a very good weekend.
What's next for Mia Mischief?
Mia Mischief, her next major target will be the Ballerina at Saratoga. I thought that we feel that she's run really well at Churchill
mm-hmm.
and at Saratoga. So the Humana Distaff was her early season goal, and the Ballerina will be her summer goal.
Is there any chance we get to see She's a Julie in the Fleur-de-Lis, or does she have another race in mind?
The Fleur-de-Lis is her next, is the plan next start for She's a Julie.
Great, great. Midnight Bazoo, congrats on the Apple Blossom. She's bypassed it. I would assume she is going to target a major race on Belmont weekend?
The Ogden Phipps is her next target, yes.
Yeah, that was nice victory in the apple blossom. That was such a interesting race going into it. I thought with a late drawing on the inside, and there was much made about a late, but Midnight Bazoo really showed her class. She must be fun.
Well, you know, very special filly. You know, multiple Grade One winner, $2 million, and 3 for 3 on the year. So, you know, she has spoiled us with her consistency of attitude and the way she trains, and just what an absolutely beautiful mare that's owned by Jeff Bloom and Partners, and how fortunate we are to be associated with her.
Well, how good is Matol right now? And the Waters are, I mean, he is fast. You're going to target the Met Mile now, right?
He, you know, his first race going further than 3/4 was the Churchill Downs Handicap, and I thought it was a very strong race, very fast time, and looked very good under the wire. He has been a brilliant horse for most of his starts, and if at all, his last race was his best to date, and we're well aware who's aiming at the Met Mile. We're not looking to trade places with anybody.
No, I wouldn't. Do you approach a race like that, Steve, that, you know, you're going 7/8 for the first time? Do you have the same concerns that, say, a horse player might have, wondering if you can stretch out? Or did you have a pretty good idea you thought he might be able to handle it?
Well, no, we're in good shape. You know, what we realize is we have no control over how everybody else runs, but Matoli's doing really well. And if he does get beaten the Met Mile, they ran amazing, and we have no control over that. But I'm not looking to trade places with anybody right now.
A horse that jumped up over Preakness weekend that I was very happy to see was Tenfold, who I've been a fan of for a while, and rebounding after that Oakland Handicap. What do you think could be next on the table for Tenfold? Would you look at the race like the Foster?
We'll nominate him to the Foster. It might be a little quick back for him. You know, he's a big leggy horse that he's back at Churchill right now, but he needed the Pimlico Special. We had a very good weekend at Oaklawn that week, but I was still very disappointed with his Oaklawn Handicap. I expected him to win that day. I don't know, you know, just weather, position, who knows. But it just didn't work out for him. So not only was I satisfied, I was extremely relieved for him to win the Pimlico Special, because he is good enough. It just, we need to put it all together, and he might reach a very substantial level by the end of the year.
I'm fascinated by the elite competitors, and you're a conditioner and a manager. Do the losses stick with you a lot harder than the wins?
Always have. I mean you expect the win. It's like, yeah, that was supposed to happen. You know, like, what did you do wrong? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why did we not get the race we needed? You know, it's and that's just how the game is. Fortunately for me, I have usually have another chance tomorrow to make up for a loss. So that's what keeps you looking forward.
What were your thoughts on Laughing Fox? Rallied to finish fifth in the Preakness last weekend. Your thoughts on that performance, and what may the future hold?
No, it was, if anything, it was a bit frustrating. I mean, you watched the race. Mm-hmm. If he gets the trip we're aiming at, I believe that he's in the top three, but incurred traffic, fanned wide late, and it just wasn't the place to be on the racetrack. It wasn't what we were trying to get done. Done with him, but he showed how close he is to the top of the division, and he's had a lot of races. We spoke with Mr. Lieblong, and he's got a great appreciation for this horse, and we need to freshen him up a bit, and we'll see how he trains to decide where he shows back up. But it was a bit frustrating because I thought with a little better trip, he easily would have been in the top three.
Mm. How about another horse that comes off of a big win at Oaklawn on Derby Day, or Oaks Day, I think it was, but Combatant. That was a nice victory in a first-level allowance. Do you have any plans for him?
Well, you know, Combatant's a horse that made quite a bit of money as a three-year-old without winning anything.
Yep.
And then I think that, you know, we need to – he's got a lot of talent and a lot of potential there, and I think you're right to ask the question, but if we can get him, we can teach him how to win a little bit. He can get a higher percentage of the purses that he's running for. I think we can do a lot of good with him. But the potential's there. The horse is at Churchill, training well, but he still has conditions left. But he probably will be nominated as well.
Gotcha. Well, hey, how important is it? We touched on it together the other day, but I know you take great pride in accomplishments, and you're closing it. How bad do you want to be the all-time leading trainer at Churchill Downs? Hold on, I know you really want to. Why is that so special? Why is that special to you? Why is it special?
It's because it's Churchill Downs. I mean, are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, why do you want to win a Super Bowl, Bill Belichick?
How long have they been running at Churchill Downs? Anybody decent ever step through the stable gate? I mean, I'm kind of curious.
Yeah.
You know?
Bill Belichick, why do you want to win a Super Bowl? Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. But it's incredibly.
Come on now. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But, your first thought when you went there, you know, I remember when
was the first time you came?
Wayne Lucas, the greatest story ever was for me. I mean, just like for me, is we won my first graded stakes win ever was the Derby trial with a horse named Valid Expectations for the Ackerley brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, brought him to Churchill and tours trailer when the old stakes barn was over there by way of the racing office. And he won the Derby trial. It was my first graded stakes win ever. And the next day, you know, you're up, walk up to the fence and watching the Derby horses train. And family friend, you know, for my whole life, Mr. Lucas and stuff, he said, when you bring a horse for the Derby, don't forget to bring a pony so you can get away from the media. I mean, I thought, yeah, right, when I bring a horse to the Derby. That's all I thought. Yeah, right, when I bring a horse to the Derby, you know, get back away.
And now here we are.
And get back to Texas, you know. But from that, from how foreign him saying that to me was in 96, to you say, you know, there's a shot that it for a temporary period of time, I might be on the lead as the all-time leading trainer at Churchill. That's how special it is.
It is special.
I'm a kid who grew up wanting to do this.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm pretty confident when you achieve this goal, I don't think you're going to be passed anytime soon either. I just think Bill Mott held it. Bill Mott held it for 32 years.
Yes.
32 years, and I'd be surprised if you didn't hold it for a long time.
The fire doesn't feel like it's going away, if that matters.
No, I know that. I know retirement's not looming with you. So, well, hey, I really appreciate the visit, and congrats again on such a tremendous couple of weeks. It's really been nice to watch those horses perform at the highest level.
Well, sounds good. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Steve Asmussen, Hall of Fame trainer. And
he's had some good visits on our show in the past.
He has, and that was a stupid question. Well, it really was a stupid question.
Well, I think the last time we had him on our show, he was at the airport and he was flying somewhere, and he was telling us all kinds of stories, which was great. And that was a good visit.
I didn't get to ask him what he thought about the Cowboys draft pick.
That's all right. We don't need to hear about the Cowboys.
Well, I just know he has opinions.
Yes,
you know,
he does.
It'll be unfiltered. And now he's a tremendous horseman. I'll tell you that.
Oh, it's
and then boy, we really want to thank Rusty Arnold for a great visit, and also thank David Carroll for a great visit with discussing War Will and looking back at Easy Goer. Hard to believe it's 30 years. By the way, the Belmont Stakes is coming up, and you might want to know who might be showing up in the entry box in the mile and a half race on June the 8th. And by the way, that entire racing program at Belmont will be outstanding. They have a tremendous undercard. A lot of the horses you saw at Oaks and Derby will be back on that undercard. But the Belmont looks like Bourbon War, Everfast, who jumped up and spoiled many people's tries, supers, exactos.
Ron Paolucci gave Dale Romans a bunch of grief this morning because he said, I don't think anyone's happy with your horse that he ran second except you and Brad Kelly.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And he was that type of horse that can we focused on it last week with Travis Stone about the bomber that can stumble into it. He did. I mean, he was the horse that stumbled into it. Maybe a game winner shows up in the Belmont. He hasn't, breezed yet since the Derby, but he's still at Churchill Downs. Global Campaign, the big winner of the Peter Pan. Intrepid Heart for Todd Pletcher. He was third in the Peter Pan. The Japanese horse, Master Fencer, who finished seventh in the Derby but was rallying up the rail and galloped out strong to only get beat by four lengths. He'll be there. Owen Dale could show up. He, of course, was third in the Preakness. Pluque Parfait, the UAE Derby winner. Sir Winston for Cassie could be joining his stablemate. He was a runner-up in the Peter Pan. Tacitus is a horse I immediately watched. I liked him in the Derby, but the way he ran that day for Bill Mott, I thought he ran evenly, a little bit like a Belmont type horse. He'll be in there, and then of course Tax is going to be back. He's back, and then War of Will. So the Belmont Stakes, is coming up in a couple of weeks. This weekend at Churchill Downs. Again, KK touched on it earlier. We have 12 races tomorrow. 12 races.
Oh, I wish.
Sorry. 11 races tomorrow, starting at 12:45. Para Stakes races, the Curtana. We got an odds on 4-5 morning line favorite for Cox making its U.S. debut.
Yeah, I don't think she's beatable.
Yeah. And then, of course, the Winning Colors, a tremendous betting race. A lot of good allowance races and maidens to join the mix. They've really been strong in field size both Saturday and then Sunday's 9 race card, also a good program. And then Monday, we have 9 races at 12:45. So
keep an eye out the next couple of weeks. There's been a ton of 2-year-old traffic in the mornings on the work tab. And so keep an eye out for the 2-year-olds. They're about to show up for those closing weekend stakes. And the next month, the Bashford Manor and the Debutante.
Yeah, those are coming up. It's hard to believe. We're hitting the halfway point of the meet, but a lot of good things still ahead this weekend. All right, for Magic Mike and Kevin Kirstein, I'm Darren Rogers. Thanks for listening to Inside Churchill Downs on ESPN 680, 105.7.